The Playlist with Ben and Fiona.
I showed them the trailer and they were like, we can't see that. Why did you show us that?
Welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about movies and TV shows that are worth your time. I'm Fiona Williams and I'm joined by my co-host, Ben Nguyen. What are we talking about today, Ben?
Hi, Fiona. This week, we're clowning around with the Stephen King sequel, It Chapter 2. V, you're speaking to one of the film's stars, Bill Hader. And we dip into body-positive millennial comedy Shrill, along with comparing notes on what we've been watching.
All right. And up first, It, Chapter 2.
Something happens to you when you leave this town. The farther away, the hazier it all gets. But me, I never left. I remember all of it.
The 2017 film adaptation of It combines sun-dappled coming-of-age drama in small-town 80s America with haunted house horror. As a band of teenage boys known as the Losers Club and their one female friend, Beverly, defeated the child-murdering monster that feeds off fear and manifests as Pennywise.
I missed you!
A buck-toothed dancing clown. It was successful enough to generate a new sequel, It Chapter 2, which picks up 27 years later with James McAvoy and Jessica Chastain leading the cast as the grown-up Bill and Beverly, with Bill Hader as the bespectacled Joker Richie, who along with the rest of the Losers Club gets called back to their hometown of Derry as Pennywise re-emerges to exact revenge. V, I saw the first It, but not this new sequel. Should I watch it?
Well, if you do, you need to set aside about 3 hours.
Oh, it's a long one.
It is a long one, yeah.
Well, the first was quite long too, I think about 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I watched them back in fairly close succession. Mm. Obviously, Bill Hader is coming up. But I'd also avoided any of this It business up until, you know, just this past weekend. I had not watched Stephen King. I had not read the book. Mm. I had not seen the Tim Curry miniseries.
Oh, yeah, I did see that back in the day. I think some of my older cousins showed it to me once when I was over to visit and it freaked the pants off me.
Yeah, right, yeah. I mean, I'm on the record as not caring for clowns. I think in our first episode ever of The Playlist, I was talking about that fear.
Recurring theme.
Yeah, right, much like Pennywise.
So in this new movie, Bill Hader plays the grown-up version of Finn Wolfhard's character from the first movie. Finn Wolfhard, people will know from Stranger Things. And why don't we just jump into your interview?
Okay, well, let's listen to the chat I had with Bill Hader.
Thank you for joining us on The Playlist. It's great to talk to you.
Oh, hi, thanks.
I have to level with you. I'm not a huge fan of clowns.
Oh, good.
Yeah, great. So in the past week, I've had to watch both of the It movies, and I'm always going to associate that with you now. But it's good for me, I suppose. Hey, this is your first horror movie, yeah?
Yep, yeah.
Yeah. What made you want to be in one and in this one?
I don't know. I kind of like them. I like big monster movies and things like that. And I like Stephen King growing up, and I had read this book in high school, and I remember the miniseries. So I just thought, oh, man, I'd love to be a part of that.
Yeah. And, of course, you're playing the adult version of Finn Wolfhard. Did you try to bring any of him into your performance? Sort of did you try to play a grown-up version of him, or was it sort of...
Watched what he did in the first movie. I mean, it wasn't... Yeah, just kind of watch what he did and then just try to make an extension of that, but also kind of make it your own, you know?
Yeah. And where did this one come sort of in your timeline of work and sort of in the seasons of Barry and whatnot, having to fit this in?
We shot this while we were writing Barry. So we started writing Barry, and then for 2.5 months I left and went and shot this movie, and we actually pushed production a month so I could go do the movie.
Okay.
And then came back and shot season 2.
Yeah, okay. How did that sort of work for you? Was it sort of a bit of a break that you needed and to just do something?
Oh, yeah, no, it felt great. I mean, it was nice to go do something where I wasn't the producer and writer and director on it, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Nice to kind of be just the actor was kind of nice.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, shoot your big scenes and see you later. And also this style of movie. I mean, it does go to some dark places, quite literally, and, you know, all the rest of it with all the clowns, just the one. And the production of it, the spectacle, I guess, and the scale of production, I'm just wondering kind of how that was in comparison to other work you've done and just sort of knowing that you like to direct too, just sort of what you sort of observed about the production.
elements?
It was huge. It was just a massive set, and it was cool. A lot of practical sets. I mean, I'd done movies like Tropic Thunder or Night at the Museum 2, actually had really big sets on that movie. Mm. But yeah, no, it was definitely the most intricate sets I'd ever been a part of. And it was a lot of fun, to be honest. It was a big sewer set that was really fun to shoot in, and that was good.
Yeah, no, it looked pretty lavish. Yeah, especially when it goes all bit Prometheus at the end there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I've heard you sort of described as a bit of a big film nerd. What are some of the standouts for you sort of certainly in the monster and the horror genre?
Probably the George Romero's movies, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead. I like the Val Lewton movies that RKO made in the 40s. Mm. Like Cat People and I Walk with a Zombie. Those films are great. Mm. I have a soft spot for kind of the Roger Corman kind of B monster movies and also Japanese, the Toho films like War of the Gargantuans and all that stuff. Mm. And then John Carpenter's The Thing is a big one. Mm-hmm. And then the Evil Dead movies, Sam Raimi's Evil Dead movies were really big for me.
Oh, right, cool, yeah. And fun too, like, yeah, that did.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they totally hold up too. And I guess with Richie, you know, he's a bit of a dick to start with, I guess, when we first meet him, let's be honest. Tell us how you saw him and wanted to play him.
He's just kind of a comedian, but like a lot of comedians, they kind of use comedy as a boundary to kind of, you know, keep a boundary between them and other people, but also within themselves and their emotions, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how I kind of, you know, I just know people like that. And I'm sure I on some level have been like that as well. Mm. But, you know, I think that's kind of what Andy and I talked about was, you know, just keep it funny. Mm-hmm. But it's a way of coping with everything.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you know, who's to say what being hunted by a creepy clown will do to you, sort of how that shapes your life. So, yeah, not one to judge. And, on that kind of clown stuff, remember when the first one was, the first remake was happening a couple of years ago and there were all those reports of the creepy clown sightings that people were sort of emulating around America and the UK? Do you remember all that when that movie was?
Yeah.
Do you think that might start happening again?
Oh, I hope so for your sake, just to make your life. No.
Yeah, cheers.
I don't know. I feel like, I don't know if people would, maybe, I don't know. If they did, that's weird.
It is. Well, it's weird anyway, but yeah, I would hope not too. So thank you. And are your kids old enough to see this film? Sort of No.
No, they're 10. The oldest one's 10 and then 7 and 5.
All right.
And I showed them the trailer and they were a bit like, what? No, I don't want to see. Even they were like, we can't see that. Why did you show us that?
That's fair. I mean, I'm 43.
Yeah. They were like, why? I can't see that. Why would you think it's okay that we could see that?
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
Mm. And what was it like with Bill in the full Pennywise makeup? Sort of I've seen that great photo of you and him on set. Sort of you seem to have cracked him up.
Yeah, we're just laughing. I mean, he was never in character or anything like that. But then when he had to do it, he was pretty amazing. Mm. You know, he was pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, right.
But he was just a great guy. Just a great, 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 great guy.
Uh-huh. So he didn't go method or anything?
No. Mm-hmm. I always find that weird. People go method. I don't understand it.
Yeah, especially in that getup, I would think as well.
Yeah, it's like, well, there's also cameras around. It's hard to go, and people are saying, stop, do it over again. Like, I don't know. I just find it strange.
Mm, yeah, no, I can imagine. And with the rest of the ensemble, sort of how did you all work together? And had you worked with any of them before?
Me and Jessica and James actually were in a movie together called Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, which is a...
Oh, right, yep.
Yeah, like an independent movie. Yes. So we did that back in 2012. Mm. And had a great time. So it was fun. So it was fun seeing them again and getting to work with them. And, you know, it's great.
Hmm. And what's next for you?
Start Barry season 3 writing in 2 weeks.
Okay, right. Right into it.
Yeah. Right back into the fray.
All of that. Yeah. No, congratulations on that show. That's incredible. And
thanks so much.
And I imagine the doors it's opened for you as well, sort of people seeing the range that you've got that.
Thank you.
Yeah. No.
Thank you very much.
And have you found other things coming on your radar that notably are different from other work that's come your way before?
Not really. Mm-hmm. I mean, just Barry takes up so much of my life when I'm doing it. So, you know, I'm writing a script that I'd like to direct at some point, but yeah, no, Barry's, that's my whole, you know, even fitting in this movie was pretty hard, you know? So, Barry's pretty all encompassing for me.
Right. No, I can imagine. Yeah. Well, maybe this answers the next question, but we like to ask our guests what they've been watching, sort of loving or hating, or just something that's been on their radar to be watching. Have you been watching anything, or has it all been sort of Barry World?
I'm in Barry World. I'm pretty bad at watching television. I mean, I like Fleabag.
Mm. All movies.
I watch a lot of old stuff. So I watched Milos Forman movie from the 60s called The Fireman's Ball, which is really great, and Loves of a Blonde. Those are two great movies. There's also these Andrzej Wajda movies that I really like called Canal, and another one called A Generation, another one called Ashes and Diamonds. Those actually had a pretty big influence on the second season of Barry. So yeah, those are the kind of things where my head's in that.
Yeah,
those
brilliant.
Kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. I can honestly say we've not had those answers before. So it's brilliant. So maybe you can't talk about it, but the film that you want to be making, what kind of stories are you looking to direct in sort of the film space?
I don't know. I'm just figuring it out right now, actually.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, I have no idea.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a real treat to talk
to you.
And congratulations on Barry specifically. But yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
So, Fi, this new It picks up 27 years later. So we had all the younger cast in the earlier movie. You know, some good actors now, including Bill Hader, joining the cast to play the grown-up versions. How was Bill in this movie?
Well, he is a version of Finn Wolfhard, as you know, like sort of he was the wisecracking kid, the glasses, and sort of just the annoying
misjudged
joker.
Wisecracks.
And here he's playing a stand-up comedian. Yeah, his way of coping with the trauma is to make jokes, making bad jokes. Yeah. Well, the thing is also they've forgotten what's happened 27 years ago. So once you leave the town of Derry, you bury those memories. And here it is where those who have left have to be confronted with Pennywise is back and the memories start coming. So he's blocked it with terrible jokes. And, yeah, he's dealing with a whole lot of trauma and he's quite closeted and, like, he's coping with a lot of stuff. So in that sense, he's being annoying for a reason. He's a pain in the ass, quite frankly. But once the horror kicks in, everyone gets their big moment of having to recall the trauma of the first one. There is a lot of the kids in this too, though.
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of the grown-up versions, you know, Jessica Chastain, James McAvoy, Bill Hader, as we know. But then the child versions are in this a lot as well. And as did I mention, it's 3 hours. because there's, I guess, scenes they cut from the first one that they're back in this one.
As a reminder of what happened in the first movie, or does it sort of take it forward somehow or tell you more about the characters?
A bit more about the characters, kind of like after that summer after they dispensed with Pennywise.
Yeah.
Or did they? So you see like a scene where they had a fort that they all sort of retreated to. And there's someone else who, if you remember the end of the first one, Beverly has a bit of a flash forward and she sees them. When they all touch hands, I think she sees a glimpse into the future. And maybe not everyone is going to be able to come back.
Mm.
So they're dealing with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, the actress who did play Beverly, she's now played by Jessica Chastain. Her name's Sophia Lillis, who I thought she looked a lot more like Amy Adams.
I thought that watching the first one as well. It's true.
But anywho, she's Jessica Chastain, friend of the show, Jessica Chastain, is playing her now. And this one, I mean, it's right into it from the very first. There is a hate crime at a fun park, and I believe that's kind of what summons Pennywise. It's not really explained. It's horrendous, really violent from the get-go. And director Xavier Dolan is one of the actors in this scene, just as a bit of a cameo, first of a few cameos. Stephen King is also in this, as is Peter Bogdanovich, the director, in a very playing the back wall.
Right.
Cameo.
Wow.
Yeah. Because James McAvoy plays a screenwriter and Peter Bogdanovich is directing that film.
Well, Bill Hader, I'm sure, got his old Hollywood fix then.
Yeah, very much so, probably.
Chatting on set.
Chatting in the catering.
So who's Stephen King show up as?
It's a very small scene, but he's kind of the owner of a antique shop and they all have to find a...
Oh, Stephen King in creepy antique shops.
Yeah.
Those go well together.
Yeah, he's kind of the curmudgeonly proprietor of an old wares shop in Derry.
Because the first movie traded off quite a familiar Stephen King trope, which is that sort of nostalgia for coming of age in a certain era of kind of small town America. To be honest, I felt like it spent too much time on that in a way that it thought that it had some pathos or poignancy or something that I don't think it really had earned. But I suppose that also was to try and give you a breather from the horror moments to try and make those feel more effective.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the other thing, watching it, as you kind of realize that influence that Stephen King had on Stranger Things, because not only do they share an actor, but that whole thing about boys riding around on bikes in the 80s trying to figure out sort of how to ward off a monster.
Mm-hmm. And the parents are nowhere to be seen either.
Like yeah,
it's,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
The kids' own adventure.
That influence. I feel like this remake of It would never have happened without the success of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting to is that I wondered how this new movie works without the benefit of that Stephen King nostalgia, given that it is set pretty much in the present day. Yeah.
Yeah, give or take a couple of years. But see, it has so much of the old, like 27 years ago footage in it as well.
Mm.
So I think it's still keeping its toe in there quite, it's up to an ankle. There is just so much of it as well, which surprised me. It's as much a story of back then as it is now as well. And I think, you know, it's looking at how you're shaped by trauma and repression because there is so much of it. So I don't think it's really moved beyond that all that well.
Mm.
Yeah, it seems like it has its cake and wants to eat it as well.
Mm. But it doesn't do it successfully is what I'm reading.
Oh, no, not for me. Because there are six characters as their adult selves, but also as their child selves as well. So that's like 12 stories, really. Everyone has to have their moment with Pennywise and remember their original moment with Pennywise and then deal with Pennywise in a big Prometheus-like fashion at the end.
Yeah.
And there's a very strange Native American thread or a nod to it. It's kind of it's not very well done at all. There's like the mystical element and there are no characters you get to explain. No Native American characters. It's flashback being explained by another character that doesn't really go anywhere. I think it could have done without that. I don't know if that's part of the book.
I haven't read the book.
Yeah. And the scenes build to a crescendo and then it's reset again for the next quiet moment that then builds to a crescendo and there's a lot of just echoing of the first one. It's a sequel and it kind of leaves it open for a third one.
Right. So after sitting through that for 3 hours, you wouldn't be back for a third?
I don't think so. I don't know. Well, also I don't know. It doesn't really explain the Pennywise element. Is he a figment? Like literally, what is it?
Yeah.
What is it? I should say, all the shape-shifting, sure. There are good jump scare moments and the woman next to me was having a very traumatic time of it. So I had as much fun watching her watch it as I did myself. Yeah, I wasn't all that scared for someone who can't stand clowns. I don't mind 3-hour movies. Like just that's not my issue with it as well. Like it just felt much, much longer than 3 hours and it's not justified really. I mean, there's not enough story to warrant the running time. Yeah, too much and not enough.
I'm hearing that you should give It a miss.
Put that on the poster, yes. So, you know, not my thing, but good popcorn movie. If you want to spill a bit of popcorn as you have a jump scare, go for it. It's in cinemas now. So what's up next?
Well, let's talk about Shrill.
Let's see. I got my lotion and my gum and my shoelaces for my brown shoes. And could I also get the morning after pill?
Hey, Nick, do we sell the morning after pill?
Oh, that's okay. We don't need to bother Nick. He's doing pill business.
So whether it's Girls, Atlanta, Please Like Me or Fleabag, there's been a growing space for hip or hipster comedies that offer a unique view of the challenges of young adulthood. The new SBS Viceland and SBS On Demand series Shrill aims to join that roster with the story of Annie, Eddie Bryant from Saturday Night Live.
I know I'm just assistant calendar editor, but I would really love to write more. And
Eddie,
but I think...
you millennial dumpling, work hard and pay your dues.
So that's a maybe then, right?
A 30-ish woman living in Portland who's overlooked at work and who the guy she's sleeping with makes her leave out the back so she's not seen by his housemates. Both her mother and perfect strangers feel entitled to make comments about her health or to compare her to Rosie O'Donnell.
Are you liking the thin menu?
It's fine.
Well, are you doing the almonds between meals?
Yeah, they're so satisfying. Sometimes when I have 6 almonds, I feel like I had 12 almonds.
And that's because she's plus-sized with a bundle of self-esteem issues and insecurities. But over the 6 episodes, we'll begin to see that change. Bea, did you start to see the world through Annie's eyes?
Yeah, I really enjoy this series. And yeah, it is only 6 episodes, which is a very short binge on demand.
US series in particular, I think.
Yeah, for sure. But it's short and sweet and to the point and leaves you wanting more. No, it's really well written. And I think you really do get a sense of who Annie is. I think Eddie Bryant is so great at bringing the character to life. I think there's a warmth to her and funny and humour. And yeah, you see the impact of the interactions with people, everyone from the chemist to the kid she's sleeping with or her boss who, what does he call her? A millennial dumpling. So, you know, all the...
Yeah, some well-drawn characters, I think.
They really are.
And some good casting.
Yeah, believable interactions, I think.
And some good sharp lines. Mm. She gets to deliver some nice ones. There is that sort of self-empowerment story and her becoming more comfortable in her own skin. Mm. It frustrated me that loser boyfriend, that she didn't just ditch him and move on. But, you know, I guess sort of that's part of the story that it's is telling, that you know, we don't sort of change overnight and reinvent our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like she knows he's a dickhead, but also she's with someone. So there's kind of this, it's only 6 episodes, as we know, so she doesn't really evolve all that much. But she knows she can do better, but does she want to be out there on her own just yet? It's a tricky one that she navigates, yeah.
Yeah. And for me anyway, this was the first time that I think I've seen an abortion scene on screen.
Mm.
I've seen, you know, storylines that involve walking up to the clinic and walking out, but actually to see someone on, you know, the table having the procedure performed, I thought, like, that was very new and welcome.
Yeah, no, well noted. It's a show that has warmth and fun and humour, but it's realistic as well, so it's not afraid to go there at all.
So this was based on Shrill Notes of a Loud Woman by Lindy West, which was a collection of essays that she wrote talking about her own experiences, and that gives this show a real authentic grounding and sense of perspective. And it's reflected in the fact that Annie in the story is a writer herself, and we see her career progress and increasingly her able to find her own voice as a writer. So it's nice to have that element of reality behind the show.
Mm. And Eddie Bryant is great as Annie. And she, for what I don't watch Saturday Night Live a lot, but what I have seen of it, she's kind of underused. And like she's sort of, you know, the quote unquote fat girl when they need one in a scene. She's not really used a lot in it. So it's good to see her actually lead a show. She did famously play Sarah Huckabee Sanders when she was the White House spokesperson at the terrible press conferences. But now she's gone, she wouldn't be playing her again. So it is really great to see her lead the series because she's very funny.
Yeah. And there's a bit of Saturday Night Live producers behind the scenes, Lorne Michaels.
Yeah, and Elizabeth Banks as well. So this is sort of a joint project by them.
And all episodes of Shrill are up on SBS On Demand now, and it's a really easy binge.
Very much so, yeah. If you choose to watch on TV, it's screening on Tuesdays on SBS Viceland.
And now it's time for what we've been watching. Fee, what have you been watching?
Well, I have been watching Mustang, the beautiful Turkish film.
I've heard so much about this, but I haven't seen it.
Okay, well, you should. It's streaming on demand now, SBS On Demand. It has just played on SBS World Movies, so it's available for a while at SBS On Demand now. And this one is directed by Deniz Gamze Ergüven, who's a French-Turkish director, and she has just done a couple of episodes of The Handmaid's Tale Season 3. And for those who watch it, those are Eps 11 and 12, which 11 was the massive one. For those who watch, it was Fred and Serena driving off to Canada. It's the ones where Winslow copped it. And the next one, the Eleanor episode. So fantastic episodes of Handmaid's Tale.
Mm.
It was a perfect synergy of director and story in her doing Handmaid's Tale episodes, because Mustang, getting back to Mustang, it was Oscar nominated back a few years ago.
Yeah.
But it's a wonderful story of a group of sisters. Well, they're seen playing with boys in the ocean after school, pure harmless horseplay, just in the waves, mucking around with their male friends. But that doesn't go down too well, and they are hurried away, shut away, really, with an uncle and family. And they vary in age. One is very young. She's sort of tween up to late adolescence is the sort of the age range of the sisters, and they're married off, basically. But it's from their perspective, so it's this great story of sisterly bonds and kind of just resilience and their strong bonds between each other. It's wonderful, and it's beautifully shot. Music by Warren Ellis.
Mm.
And, yeah, it's just magical. It's kind of been described as a companion to The Virgin Suicides. Sort of. I think it's stronger.
But
it's just a beautiful story of female resilience.
Mm, well, that's a good
Mustang.
Rap.
Yeah, go watch it. Ben, what have you been watching?
Well, there's a little show which I stumbled upon. Have you ever heard of this show, 600 Bottles of Wine?
No.
No, well, neither had I. So actually sort of how I found this was I was looking through what the BBC had been recently playing, and they had a recommendation of if you liked Fleabag, you'll like this. So it's a show called 600 Bottles of Wine, about young single women. It had been playing on BBC Three. I immediately assumed it was British. Even when I started watching it, I thought, here we are in London.
Mm.
Then I hear an Australian accent and I think to myself, oh, well, you know, that's nice. They've cast an Australian based in London. You know, it's nice when Aussies pop up unexpectedly.
Yeah, I mean, they are everywhere. So, yeah, expats living in London is not a stretch.
Yeah. And then I realise everyone's talking in an Australian accent. And I realise I'm watching an Australian show.
Okay.
So this show premiered as a web series in 2017. It was crowdfunded.
Mm.
And 11, sort of Channel 10's digital channel, broadcast it last year.
Okay.
And I feel like it's entirely slipped under the radar, but it's obviously kind of spread internationally. Mm. Had a bit of a global pickup. And it's great. So it's written and created and starring a woman called Grace Rouvray, who she based it on a blog that she wrote about her own dating experiences. Mm. So we basically get thrust immediately into a bar in Sydney, and Grace's character Claire and her three friends are basically out to pick up. And we get a deep dive into what singledom is like for 20-something women in Sydney. And I think there's some very specific references. There's, conversation about the respective merits of a Surrey Hills man versus a Mossman man.
Mm-hmm.
And like some very, very specific references about trying to pick up on the corner of Crown and Favreau Street, which I think even some people who live in Sydney would not entirely understand the geographic references. But obviously, people can get the gist.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was refreshing to see something that was actually so specific about the city in which I live.
Yeah.
And that had completely gone under the radar for probably most Australian audiences. So when 10 played it, it was on 10 Play, but you might have to do a little bit of digging to find where you can watch it now, but it's definitely out there for you to view.
Yeah, good to know.
So all 8 episodes, and they're short episodes, so really quick bingeable watch.
Another one, yep.
Are available on iTunes and I'm sure other video providers.
Mm. Or easy in the UK, apparently. All right, well, I think that wraps it up.
Yes, that's it for another week. Make sure you subscribe to SBS The Playlist wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a lot of stars, leave a nice review because it helps people to find the show. And you can let us know what you thought of the movies and TV shows we discussed on Facebook or Twitter at SBS Movies. I'm on Twitter at Ben Nguyen TV.
I'm on Twitter at Anything But Fifi.
And The Playlist is produced by Jeremy Wilmot. Until next week.
Thanks for listening.